This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
All right, football fans, the NFL draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. A-U-D-A-C-Y. Download it today.
Live from downtown San Francisco, this is 95.7 The Game.
Hey, thanks for spending part of your Father's Day with us. Kevin Michael, Whitey Gleason. Thrilled to be today with the one and only Kyle Madsen. We're with you until 4 today on 95.7 The Game, 888-957-9570. Kyle, I already have to point out, pardon me, but before we get any further, I have to point out that the Wolverines on the text line, they're already coming after me, Kyle. They started coming after me before our show even started. It's a holiday. What's going on?
This is outrageous. I don't know how this happened. I don't know who at Big Text Line is letting this go down, but somebody is out to get you. And yeah, on Father's Day, no less. Whitey, happy Father's Day to you.
Thank you, Kyle.
I'm excited to spend the next 4 hours with you.
I'm excited to spend the next 4 hours with you. We've done a handful of shows in recent weeks. We've had a lot of fun. I know we'll have a lot more fun today. Before we get into the show, I just want to address this, if I may, quickly. From the 408, I can't wait to disagree with Whitey Gleason on which player the Warriors should draft. I know I won't agree with his take. Probably won't agree with Steiny as well.
Haters.
Can't wait. I mean, that's all in fun. That's not a cheap shot or anything, obviously. But it's like, what? And I kind of take it as a compliment. You know, Steiny knows his basketball, so if you're lumping me in there with Steiny, that's great. But Kyle, was my take on the draft last year so out there? I thought, okay, Wiseman, I get why they pick him. I really like Halliburton. Was that such a radical take? Was that such an outrageous, offensive take?
No, I don't think so. I was in on Trey Halliburton as well in a trade back scenario, like to 5 or 6, because we talked to an analyst pre-draft who said the biggest issue with Tyrese Halliburton is that he doesn't look for his own shot. It's like, that's it? Like, well, you can coach that. You can tell the guy, shoot it 15 times tonight. So I don't think it was that outrageous. I do love the idea, though, of somebody forming their sports takes just based on the opposite of what you say.
Yeah, good luck with that. You actually could have some success there. I will confess, and I don't know where you were on this, Kyle, but I've been open about this. To me, by the way, I feel like if any of us on the radio, in media, if we're going to say, you know, this is going to happen, that's going to happen, then when you're wrong, and you're going to be wrong sometimes, you have to admit, all right, hey, I missed that one. Otherwise, you have no credibility whatsoever. And I was wrong about LaMelo, at least I think I was. Who knows? You know, it's only been one season. I did not think the Warriors should take LaMelo. I said so, and it looks like now, I guess you could make the case that, wow, they should have at least strongly considered him. So I will say that.
Yeah. I was there too. I swung and missed on LaMelo. He's going to be a really good player.
Yeah. All right. Anyway, we appreciate it. Good or bad. Thanks for listening. We enjoy and appreciate your participation. 888-957-9570. Here you go. From the 650. Yes, I get some KM and Whitey on my Odyssey app while at work. Thank you. I appreciate that. Now, Kyle, I mentioned this Friday. The coolest sports thing my dad ever did for me, you know, today being Father's Day, my dad was a sports writer. I wouldn't have the interest in sports I do without my dad, as I'm sure a lot of us could say. But the coolest sports thing my dad ever did for me, he got me Lou Brock's autograph. Lou Brock was my favorite player. My dad was a sports writer, and, you know, sports writers, you're not supposed to get autographs. Mm-hmm. And he actually was covering the Giants and the Cardinals one game, and he got Lou Brock's autograph, and he gave it to me. And I had it on my wall in my bedroom for, I don't know, 12 years whatever it was. So that was the coolest sports thing my dad ever did for me. How about you? The coolest sports thing your dad ever did for you? Didn't your dad give you like a Nolan Ryan rookie baseball card or something?
Yeah, I've gotten a couple cool things like that from my dad. And I want to make it clear, the amount of sports things my dad has done for me in my life is expansive. Like when you asked me that question before the show, you're like, hey, I'm going to ask you this. That's how producing works.
Behind the scenes. Ooh, peek behind the curtain. Wow.
Pulling the curtain back. We talk before the show. So outside of, you know, waking up early on his days off to take me out to the baseball field and, you know, help me practice fielding and hitting and pitching, whatever I was working on that specific day, or driving me to practices or far off tournaments, outside of all that stuff, if it's something material, yeah, he gave me a Nolan Ryan rookie card, the one with Jerry Kuzman on it as well. And then he also bequeathed unto me his Cal Ripken Jr. rookie card. Cal Ripken Jr. was my favorite player growing up, and my dad had his rookie card, so he gave it to me, you know, in a nice, you know, the glass card case. And so those are two of my more cherished sports memorabilia, and both of them came from Pops.
Another cool thing my dad did for me sports-wise that I know you can relate to, because you played catcher, right? Didn't you?
I did.
Weren't you? Yeah, okay. So I was 4 or 5 maybe, and on my birthday, my dad says, let's go to, I think it was Sears, and I'll get you whatever you want. You pick something out, and I'll get it for you for your birthday. Again, I'm like 4 or 5 years old, could barely play anything. And I saw this catcher's mitt. I was like, that's the coolest thing. Dad, I want that catcher's mitt. And I remember him going, really? You know, it's really hard to use, and you're not really playing baseball. I was like, yeah. And so he got me the catcher's mitt. And yeah, it you know, I didn't use it much. It's, you know better than I. It's difficult to use a catcher's mitt, especially when you're 5 years old.
Right.
But that was cool. I appreciated that. How did you end up playing catcher? Because not everybody wears the tools of ignorance, Kyle.
So this actually ties in really nicely with my dad, because I tried out for this travel team, and the travel head coach calls and says, we want Kyle on the team, but we want him to try playing catcher. I'm 12 years old, never played the position. So we go down.
Travel ball. Ooh, travel ball.
Yeah, big, you know, big travel ball guy. And,
congratulations.
And yes, thank you, everybody. So good house ball player, mediocre to below average travel ball player. It was fine. So I go and I get the catcher's gear. My dad went and, you know, got books and videos and would read on his own time on drills I should be doing and all that. And he would take me out to the field and worked with me. And I ended up playing catcher all the way up through high school. So as a position, I really learned to love and enjoy. And it was largely due to the fact that my dad pushed me so hard to be good at it.
So
good,
who's your favorite catcher? Your favorite catcher of all time? Do you have one since you were a catcher?
Favorite catcher of all time?
Busty Poser.
No.
Terry Steinbach. You're an A's guy, right? Terry?
Yeah, yeah.
Terry Steinbach.
Yeah, Steiny, the original Steiny, the real Steiny, is definitely in there, although I don't really remember the Terry Steinbach era at all. So... Mm-hmm. Man, I'm going to have to think about that. Like Johnny Bench is one of the first guys that comes to mind just
sure.
because of
he's pretty good,
iconic.
I think.
Yeah. Decent
player.
I don't like to pick the, you know, good guys. I like to kind of go with the under the radar type of guy. So Johnny Bench for sure is up there. I really like Sean Murphy, who's the A's catcher right now.
Oh,
he's terrific.
Yeah. Do you remember, or have you heard of Mickey Tettleton, who caught for the A's for a while? And I think he caught for the Tigers and the Orioles.
Yeah. I heard
Mickey
the name.
Tettleton. Yeah, so the first time I was ever fortunate enough to throw out the first pitch at an A's game, I'll admit, okay, I scuffed it a little. I overthrew, and I held on too long, and it bounced in front of Mickey Tettleton. So he makes a catch. And then there's a guy from, I think, Safeway or something like that, and he throws out the first pitch. It's like, oh, there you go. And so we go up, you know, walk up to Mickey Tettleton to get the baseball, and I was in front because I went first. And he holds out his mitt, and I go to get a baseball. He goes, uh-uh. He goes, that's not yours. And he takes mine and he turns it over as a big skid mark. And he goes, this one's yours. It's like, oh, wow. Wow, thanks a lot, Mickey Tettleton.
Brutal.
So, yeah. But he was right. You know, you gotta be able to reach the catcher. Anyway, it's Whitey Gleason, Kyle Madsen on this Father's Day on 95.7 The Game. And what an amazing Father's Day we have stretched out before us. U.S. Open, NBA playoffs with a Game 7 today. And Kyle, speaking of baseball, as you know better than I, this amazing season keeps rolling along. And if the postseason started today, which let me check. Okay, it does not. But if it did,
I'll double check A's, that.
Yeah, if you could, I'd appreciate that. Evan, if you could check that too. A's and Giants would both be in, which I think has only happened like 7 times. It's amazing. I know it's very early, but this has been an incredible season to this point.
So I know the last time it happened was 2014,
yes.
I think.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember then it being like a shockingly low number of times that's actually happened. But this is the first time, as you kind of think about it, it's like, man, it could... The A's and Giants making the playoffs is not that crazy of a thing, but this is the first time in a while, maybe since '89, that it's like, oh, they might be the two best teams in either league. And if you're handicapping World Series matchups, like I think A's Giants is probably up there a ways.
Yeah, I would think so. I'm hoping for that too. Yeah, I think 71, 89, 2000, 2002, 2003. And then 2012 and 2014. So maybe we're headed for that again. And I can't imagine, Kyle, you know, it's baseball and it's day to day. So if you're going to get ahead of yourself and look ahead, you know, it's risky. But next weekend is going to be one of the great weekends in Bay Area baseball history, is it not? With the A's and the Giants and a capacity crowd, or at least they will be able to open the park up to everybody Sunday in San Francisco. That's going to be Friday. What a great weekend that's going to be.
I can't wait. That atmosphere, the atmosphere for A's Giants is always really good. I know there are people who try to say it's not a rivalry, and that's fine if you want to say that. But there's definitely a little something extra when those teams play. And the atmosphere is always really good. And I'm excited to see, you know, the A's play one of the best teams in the league in the Giants and vice versa. I'm excited to see the Giants play a really good team that's not the Padres or Dodgers. So that should be a lot of fun.
Yeah,
One of my biggest questions though with the Giants, and it ties in nicely with the A's, is my biggest question with this Giants team is, are they going to be like the A's of years past, where okay, this formula that they have going works for 162 games, but when you get into a 7-game series against a team with more talent, can they keep up? And that's kind of my biggest question about the Giants so far this year. Other than that, they're incredible.
Yeah. Well, after getting crushed by the Phils yesterday, I mean, I'm just wondering, are the Giants slipping into their inevitable June swoon? Will they win another game? Yeah, they probably will. I know that. you know, pardon me. Maybe a bit of an overreaction there. It's just baseball. It happens. But it is surprising when they lose like they did yesterday. To me, and this is hardly a Kyle Madsen, Buster's not going to hit 390 hot take or anything.
Oh, boy.
But to me, yesterday, if anything, really brought more clearly into focus the need the Giants have here as a deadline approaches. They really have to address the pitching staff. I don't think that's any secret. Yeah. And I know we've been talking a lot about, they could use some bullpen arms. I think they could use... You know, they have to at least examine the starters market. And with baseball cracking down starting tomorrow on sticky substances, which I know we'll be talking about more today, what do you make of what Alex Wood said yesterday? I thought this was interesting, and it kind of flew under the radar. So I think there are a lot of pitchers that use. Did you happen to hear what Alex Wood said yesterday about sticky substances?
I did not. Enlighten me, please.
Okay, I will. You know, he's had kind of a rough go of it. Let's see, May 16th, his ERA was 1.75. And we know that since baseball let pitchers know we're going to crack down on players using the goat gloop or whatever it is, that spin rates have gone down and batting averages have gone up. So maybe it's a coincidence. But so Alex Wood, May 16th, 1.75 ERA. His ERA after yesterday is 4.09. So he was asked yesterday, just what do you think of the crackdown? And he said, I'm not going to be the person that's going to sit here and complain. This is our reality, and that's what it is now, and what it's going to be moving forward. And it's something you have to deal with. Do I think that was impactful on my outing today? No, probably not. I'm not somebody who has ever used anything for grip to enhance my vertical movement or my pitch profiles. He also says, only thing I would compare it to, it's like playing golf and then somebody telling you that you can't use a grip on your golf club anymore. There's obviously going to be adjustments that need to be made. Was that impactful today? I don't think so. So, again, I think it's very widespread. But when I read that, he's saying, yeah, I used something I can't use anymore. I wasn't using it to cheat. I was just getting a better grip. I don't know. Do you hear that the same way I hear it?
Yeah, and I think this conversation has gotten, I think what Wood said highlights the two sides of the conversation. And Peter Moylan on Bally Sports yesterday, there was a clip going around on the internet of him breaking it down, former major league pitcher. He talks about how you use like sunscreen and rosin just to get a grip on the baseball because they rub the baseballs up with mud. That mud turns to dirt. And then if you wipe your sweat on the ball, now you're wiping that mud away and you're back to just a slick baseball with the seams not raised. So if you're trying to throw a breaking ball, it's not a matter of spin rate. It's just a matter of being able to get enough friction to spin the ball so it will break. And if now all of a sudden you're having to change how you're throwing your pitches, or maybe you've been able to reliably throw your breaking ball for a strike, so in 2-0 counts or 3-1 counts, you're comfortable throwing it, and now you're not, you're changing the way fundamentally that you're attacking hitters.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think that's part of this that is being lost. If you're using your substance of choice, Whitey, goat gloop, if you're using goat gloop to ramp your fastball RPMs up 300 RPMs and all of a sudden your slider is going 97 and breaking with on an ungodly plane where it's unhittable, that's different to me than, oh, this gives the pitcher just enough to be able to throw his pitches like normal.
Now, wait a minute. You were a catcher. You played at a high level. You played freaking travel ball. And you're going to sit there and tell me you've never heard of goat gloop and that you didn't load up on goat gloop for your pitcher. And maybe you had the goat gloop. I don't know where you put it. I don't want to know. But you're going to tell me you've never heard of goat gloop. Come on, Kyle.
When you play at the travel ball level, Whitey, there's a level of integrity to the game. And for you to sit here and accuse me of besmirching the great name of U-triple-S-A like that.
All right.
I won't be having that.
That makes me angry.
It does.
I will consider withdrawing the comment, okay, as the show unfolds.
Until 4 o'clock.
How dare you?
Thank you. Yeah, so to me, it's pretty clear. I don't consider Alex Wood a cheater, you know, but to me, when I read that, I was like, okay, what he's saying is, yeah, I can't use the stuff I used, and I needed it. And I think also, Kyle, when they changed the baseball 2017 or so to fly over the fence easier, I think that motivated pitchers to find something to get a better grip. And then baseball this year went to the lighter ball, hoping for fewer homers but more balls in play. But then with the better grip and the lighter ball, spin rates went up. So baseball is just they've really had a very ham-handed approach to this whole thing. We'll see what happens starting tomorrow. How about this? Now, my understanding is I think it's actually agents saying this, because, you know, pitchers got to be really careful what they say about, I can't use the stuff I've used. But I've heard that some are afraid now that guys are going to get thrown out of games just because they have something sticky that might be legal. They're afraid that umpires are going to come out and go, what do you got in there? Hey, what's that? And the company line now, or at least the pitcher's line, I should say, is that, hey, I could have rosin and sweat, and I can make the ball stick to my hand, and pitchers are going to get thrown out of games for no reason. So that one really surprised me, and I think Trevor Bauer just demonstrated that. Did you see the pictures? He said he was using rosin, which is legal, and sweat, and he had the ball sticking to his fingers. But again, that gets back to the question of, okay, if you can get that kind of stickiness, then why do you need the goat glue at all? Yeah.
Exactly. And that's kind of the overarching big question here is like, A, where is the line? But B, if rosin and sweat are enough, then why endanger your outing by adding something different?
Yeah. Yeah.
And if rosin and sweat don't work, which Peter Moylan, who I was just talking about, said it doesn't, now that's where baseball has got to kind of figure it out. It feels like a little bit like they had a ground ball hit to them and they didn't field it cleanly at first, and then trying to pick it up and throw it, they dropped it again and flung it behind them, and now they're going to go grab it, and they tried to make a play that they shouldn't have tried to make, and they overthrew first base. That's what this feels like.
Yes.
It's like,
why are you taking cheap shots at Mauricio Dubon? I mean, that's
Come on, coach. Too soon.
No, you're right. You're right. By the way, Rosin and Sweat are going to be on at 4. So it's Whitey and Kyle taking you up to Rosin and Sweat, and they do a great show. They're coming up 4 o'clock here on 95.7 The Game.
Actually, Rosin is a backup quarterback on the 49ers, actually.
That's right. Wow. That's right. Yeah, but he's like 4th string. Isn't Sudfeld actually ahead of Rosin?
Probably.
Yeah, that's interesting to me because they gave Sudfeld like guaranteed money to come over,
right? A little bit.
But they gave him some.
Yeah, but not so much that he's for sure the number 3 guy.
Okay, all right. Kyle Madsen, of course, from Candlestick Chronicles. We'll be talking football, baseball, basketball all afternoon long here on 95.7 The Game. We'll circle back, of course, to the conversation about the sticky substances. But as far as the Giants go, Kyle, and the trade deadline, are you with me? I mean, if you're going to do anything, who knows how Farhan thinks? He's very patient. He sees things differently than you or I sometimes. But I would think pitching is where you have to look and not necessarily just the bullpen. Are you with me?
Yes. Yes, I am. I am very pro, like, go trade for Max Scherzer. That's where I'm at, because if you add an arm like that to the top of the rotation, you get to push Gausman down one spot. Now you're not having to use an opener and kind of cobble together a pitching staff. And if you get a guy like Scherzer and follow him up with Gausman, where they can get you 6, 7, 8 innings, now you're shortening your bullpen a lot, not only in those games, but you're keeping guys rested for a game where maybe Cueto goes 5. And now you're a little more confident in what you have in your bullpen. I think they need to address the bullpen for sure. But if you add an elite arm to the top of the rotation, I think that cures a lot of their problems too.
I think it would. My guess would be that Farhan does not want to part with the assets he'd have to part with to get a guy like Scherzer. And I understand the wisdom of what you're saying. I think it's more likely that Farhan looks at a pile of guys that nobody else wants these guys. All right, well, let me see what we got. Hey, you know what? I like this guy. Let's get him. And, you know, Billy used to do that, right? I mean, A's had a knack for doing that around 2000 when they were pretty good. So we'll see. We'll look at some names in just a moment. But first here, 888-957-9570. Dave and Alameda joins us on 95.7 The Game. Dave, happy Father's Day. What's up?
Oh, happy Father's Day to everyone as well. Just, you know, talking about baseball and whatnot. First thing, couple points I was going to say, Alex Wood laugh because I've been talking about him. You know, his mechanics are so out of whack, and he seems like he's on whatever trend lately that can help him, you know, in the major leagues. But right now, he's just not performing very well, and he's going to say, oh, you know, normally I'd be much, much better if I had the sticky stuff, but, you know, right now, that's why my numbers are so bad, because I don't have this other stuff. If anybody with any eyes would just say, dude, you're about to get released. Cueto, you need to get released too. DeSclafani, been pretty good, but it's not going to work out. I mean, if you want to get Max Scherzer, that's pretty cool, but you still need like 3 or 4 other pitchers, in my opinion. I was going to say, Billy Beane with the A's, you know, you're right. You know, them doing good in the regular season, you know, because Billy Beane has never even made it to the World.
Sorry, we're losing you, Dave.
No,
apologize. We're losing
that.
Dave there. Okay, thank you. Yeah, DeSclafani's pitching great. There's no way around that. Alex Wood, I hadn't thought of that. He's pitching poorly, so he's using the lack of sticky substances as an excuse. I hadn't thought of that. I am glad that Dave touched on Cueto, and I understand Cueto. He's so much fun to watch, and he's remarkable. But if I'm the Giants, I'm also looking at him going, I don't know how much longer we can keep him in the rotation. And I know everybody was excited, Kyle, on Friday. He scored on a triple. Wow. What a speed demon. Sterling could score on a triple. Am I right? You know, Sterling's a speed demon. Sterling is quite an athlete.
Hell yeah.
He
gets
carried away. Yeah, with and he fell down on the leg kick. Ah, but he's been getting hit pretty hard lately. So, again, I think it just underscores the need for the Giants to address pitching if they want to stay anywhere near the top of this thing.
Yes, I agree with that. I think their offense are going to be able to piece it together, but if you can't get guys out, especially late in games, it doesn't matter how many runs you can score. Like pitching winning championships is still maybe less of a thing than it used to be, but at some point you have to be able to win a game where your offense gets you 2 runs. And I don't feel confident in the Giants to do that right now.
Let me throw some names at you. These are names that baseball observers believe could be available. We don't know for certain. How much would you have to give up to get him? It depends. But let me just tell me if any of these names jumps out at you. I know you're on the Scherzer wagon, which is terrific. Matthew Boyd with the Tigers, Merrill Kelly, Arizona, Richard Rodriguez, Pirates, Kyle Gibson with the Rangers, Ian Kennedy, who's actually having a pretty good year with the Rangers, Kendall Graveman, Seattle, Yimi Garcia, Miami, former Giant Tony Watson, not doing great in Anaheim. He could be available. Steve Cishek, and then Jonathan Means, Mr. No-Hitter with the Orioles. Anything there, grab you.
If you can get John Means, you do it right away. John Means is a very, very good pitcher. I know that the Orioles have a couple of really, really high-quality relievers that could be available. The Orioles, in the midst of kind of a full-blown rebuild right now, where if they can get a couple of prospects, Paul Fry is the gentleman's name in Baltimore that I'm looking at. Also, Cole Sulzer is another Orioles reliever who could be available. Richard Rodriguez, who you named, is a guy I've got an eye on. Scott Barlow in Kansas City, too, is somebody who might be available, depending on how the Royals look, through the month of June and into July, heading up to the deadline. So there are going to be pitchers available, and I think maybe available for a team like San Francisco that may not want to give up a top prospect, and I totally understand why. But maybe a couple lower-level prospects that they might be able to shell out and go get a high-quality reliever. Or if they will part with a higher-level prospect, going and getting a guy like John Means would be excellent. He is, outside of his no-hitter, a really, really good pitcher.
And by the way, I apologize and I thank you for not correcting me. It's John Means, and I don't know why I called him Jonathan. To me, it's just like Jonathan Means. But I don't believe that's his name. It's actually John Means. So anyway, and how about this? The Orioles have not won a road game since he pitched his no-hitter, and the Diamondbacks haven't won a road game since Mad Bum threw his no-hitter. What is that, Kyle? What is that about?
The Diamondbacks might be the worst baseball team I've ever seen. They started 15-13, and after the Giants series had gone 5-37, and I think they lost last night, so they're now 5-38. Do you know how that's like 19 wins over a full season?
Maybe 5-38? Some teams should be allowed. Yeah, some teams should be allowed to use whatever they want in the baseball, right, to even the playing field a little
bit. Yes, yeah. I am pro. Let the Diamondbacks let them be sponsored by Goat Goop, and see if they can make it a little more competitive.
Yes, we are sponsored by Goat Goop today, and we're thrilled to have you with us on this Father's Day. Coming up, super teams suck, but watching this one lose, not as satisfying as it should have been. Why not? That's next with Whitey and Kyle on 95.7 The Game.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, 3-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I changed my bio, it says father, don't say daddy. All my friends will tip the caddies whenever we finish up 18 holes. Game night is lit now, always make noise when I sit down. That don't mean I don't spend dollars whenever I go to Home Depot.
Yeah. Now back to 95.7 The Game.
Thrilled to have you with us on this Father's Day. I'm Whitey Gleese and very happy to be with Kyle Madsen today. Kyle Madsen from Candlestick Chronicles. Kyle Madsen, the outstanding producer of the award-eligible Steiny Guru Dib Show. And I'm just fascinated, Kyle, before we get to the NBA playoffs, I'm fascinated by the fact that you played catcher. And I know we kid, but, you know, travel ball is that, you know, you played some serious baseball. I played a little bit of baseball. That's the only position I never played. Catcher. So I'm just fascinated by it. Can I ask, see, to me, one of the coolest things in baseball absolutely is when a a catcher catches a foul tip and he's stunned for a minute, or, you know, ball hits him in the head, whatever it is, and the umpire goes out and gives him, you know, they call it, I think, professional courtesy, and he goes out and dusts off home plate and gives the guy a moment to recover his sense. I think that's so cool. And, you know, catchers do the same thing when the umpire gets stung.
Yeah.
Can I ask you, when was the, you know, did you ever, what was the worst foul tip you ever caught or the worst injury you ever caught as a catcher?
I'm not at liberty to discuss. No, I actually know the answer to this because it was very clearly the worst one. So one of our pitchers threw like in the high 80s would touch 90, 91 every now and then. And I was lined up outside to a right-handed hitter and his fastball came inside and I reached over to catch it. And the batter fouled it like into the soft spot of like below the bicep and above the forearm on the inside of the elbow.
Uh-huh.
And just like a golf ball immediately formed at that spot in the arm. And that hurt a lot. I thought it was weird though when a catcher would like take all this time and like jump around and look hurt. So I really prided myself on not letting that show. but yeah, the umpire always knows because he can hear the skin smack against the ball.
Yeah,
and he went out and he, you know, they get down, you know, you're all right. Yeah, I'm good. Because it's in the umpire's best interest for you to be okay. Like right. If I'm not okay, that fastball's hitting him next time. So
yeah,
that was the worst one. That was the worst one for sure.
One time when I was playing senior Babe Ruth on, of course, Moose Lodge in Vallejo, and as you know, we won the championship that year, but the last preseason game, this guy didn't slide because the ground was so hard, and I'm trying to tag him out at third, and so instead of sliding, he just steps for the bag, and he split my wrist open. I got 15 stitches.
Oh, my
So Atlanta. The season starts, and so I can't play because I'm all stitched up and wrapped up.
Sure.
So I was like, hey, Gleason, go warm up the pitcher. And we had this lefty on the team. This is senior Babe Ruth, you know, so high school. We had a guy that was like married and smoking, and you know, he must have been like 39, I don't know. And he threw hard, no idea where it was going. Lefty. Man, that guy just, he was a huge, real husky guy. And so I'm warming him up, and he bounces one in front of me, and it hits me right in the point of the jaw. And I don't know if you can hear that. To this day, my jaw, I think he broke my jaw, and I never went and got it checked, but my goodness, that hurt.
Yeah, whatever that was going on in the microphone sounds like it hurts, too.
That was just me, seriously, just opening my mouth up.
He definitely did permanent damage there. I thought you were going to say that, and honestly, it explains a lot just in general. I thought you were going to say that he got your stitched up wrist, and I was going to throw up a little.
No, that would very have been queasy. Fun. I would have much rather had that because, you know, that's gonna hurt a little. It's going to go away. But my jaw, oh, my goodness. Right. I think they gave me a mask or something, and it caught right under the mask.
Oh,
so it was like
brutal.
Catching is, yeah, you have. Well,
back then, the masks were so, you know, archaic.
Right. It was just basically a pair of sunglasses.
Right.
That's a
surgical mask.
Yeah, that was it.
Come on, and, you know, on that.
Yeah, we didn't have, you know, when I was playing Little League in Vallejo, I got hit in the head running the bases because we didn't have enough helmets, and I got on base. It's like, this was at practice. Yeah, and what a lawsuit that would be today, right? So I get on base, and by the way, this was the practice after I got hit in the face with a pitch from the manager of the team. So I get on base, and there's like, then there's another guy gets on base, and they're like, hey, we need your helmet because we don't have enough helmets. So the batter has to wear the helmet. So I'm like, okay. And so I'm going, you know, going first to third or whatever, and there's a throw, and it hits me right in the side of the head. So it's like, my goodness, maybe this game isn't for me. And on the other hand, you really should have more helmets at this level, even though that was like minors baseball in Vallejo. Higgins Shoes, I believe, was the team, Kyle. So it's there's a rough sport.
There's a line of demarcation in the generations between. Yeah, one time I got hit in the head at a baseball game and I sued because they didn't have enough helmets. Yeah. And oh, yeah, we just didn't have enough helmets. That's just how it was.
I know.
There's another line. There's another line of when I grew up, I played for the Devil Rays and the Reds. And,
yeah,
oh, yeah, I played
right.
for Haters Shoes.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's another.
Yeah,
another
you're
line.
Right. Yeah, Higgins Shoes, Red Top Dairy, all those teams. And now it's the Indians. And I guess it's better, right? I mean, if your kid you'd rather play for even the Devil Rays?
Yeah.
Kids make funny at that time when you were, the Devil Rays, boo, they suck.
No, no, it was actually, I was 8 years old, says 1998. It was the first year the Devil Rays were actually a baseball team. So we got to be the first, in Brentwood Pony, we were the first ever Devil Rays. And we beat the A's, who were undefeated, of course, everybody knows that.
I remember that. Yeah.
It's a huge, huge story in this area, so.
Yeah. Big gambling scandal, if I recall. And you were kind of implicated, but you skated. That's what I recall about that.
I skated because they asked me to do my multiplication tables, and I said, what's that?
Well done. Yeah. Well played. Yeah, it's Whitey and Kyle here, 888-957-9570. Little League memories, travel ball memories. And speaking of Father's Day, we get a Game 7 today for Father's Day with the Hawks and, of course, the Sixers. And last night, what a great game, huh, Kyle? What a great NBA playoff game we had with that Game 7, the Bucks prevailing over the Nets in overtime. It was a great game. You know, before the playoffs started, I said my favorite team in these playoffs is the Not Nets, whoever the Nets are playing.
The Nots, right.
I'm rooting against the Nets. Because, you know, you've got Giannis, who, of course, like, I'm going to stick it out. I'm going to re-sign with the team.
Giannis,
and then the Nets.
Giannis, ticka tembo.
Giannis, airball a free throw. That's what I call him now. Giannis, airball a free throw. I've given up trying to say his last name correctly.
Sure.
So, you know, and then the Nets, of course, and the, like, mercenaries, the guys form the super team, which is their right, I know. But on some level, it's like, yeah, you shouldn't be able to do that. So I want to see them get their comeuppance. But after they lost last night, and taking nothing away from the Bucks, the way it happened, they were so battered. And, you know, KD playing the whole game. And that three at the end is like, yeah, I just can't reach the basket. And Harden limping around but playing. I just don't feel that sense of, ha-ha, they got that was what was coming to them. I just don't feel that same sense of justice that I thought I would feel when they got knocked out.
Yeah, I think it's the same sensation a lot of people had when the Warriors lost the 2019 finals. It's like, well, the Warriors didn't really lose that finals, just like the Nets didn't really, like, they lost. Like you said, I don't want to take anything away from the Bucks, but for sure, like, that wasn't James Harden out there. Kyrie Irving was in a weird hat and a t-shirt on the sideline, and Kevin Durant is coming off an Achilles injury playing 50 minutes in back-to-back games.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was an incredible effort, and that's where, like, the NBA discourse is so, like, this guy against that guy, or, you know, oh, James Harden misses the conference finals. Like, no, he didn't. James Harden played through a messed up hamstring that's probably going to sideline him for, like, the entire offseason. And it was just a really awesome, fun Game 7. It was everything you could have wanted, and it was athletes on both sides battling their hearts out. Like, that's what we want. It's competition. That's what we got.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
To sit there, and like you said, to sit there and go, ha-ha, Nets. It's like, that's the wrong. It's like, all right, if that's what you took away from that game was, ha-ha, the Nets built a super team and their super team lost. Like, I don't have anything for you. That's
right.
Just going to be how you're going to view the game. That's fine. There's just not a ton to talk about if that's the case.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I was hoping for and expecting when they lost. But instead, when they lost, it was more like, wow, that was just too bad that they weren't at full strength. We had a great series anyway. Steve Nash, the coach of the Nets, very stone-faced as a coach, right? It's interesting how he's already got a very, very coach-like persona on the sidelines.
Yeah.
Are you with me? Kind of like he's got a Christian Bale Batman look already on the sidelines going.
He's got 100% the crossed arms look of confident concern. Like, he has that stoic face where it's like, I'm very focused on what's happening because
right.
I want to make sure my team is winning every possession. Like I said, not concerned, but also not like laid back. Like, yeah, hey, whatever. I had, you know, Kevin Durant's out there. No, he did a great job of at least looking the part. I do wonder, though, I do have a couple of questions on they went 8-man rotation. And their three bench players that played accumulated zero shot attempts and as many rebounds and assists as they had fouls. Like, you can't run the bench a little deeper. And I think Nick Claxton, who logged not even a full minute, was just in to guard the inbounder at the end of the game.
Right. Which is a good move, by the way. I'm not disagreeing with you, but I always scream when I see that situation. Sometimes NBA teams don't do that, and I scream at him, get some big tall guy in there. So I applaud that. But your larger point, you're absolutely right. And if it's just, I mean, you know, that the overtime, the Bucks couldn't score, and the Nets had multiple opportunities, and they couldn't score either. And you could just see clearly they were just flat out exhausted. And Steve Nash said, we just had one too many obstacles this year. I do think, in a way, it's bad for the NBA that this team that was favored, you know, super teams, people love them or love to hate them, taking nothing away from the Bucks again, and we'll talk about the Bucks. But I think it's kind of unfortunate for the NBA that that Nets team is out of this postseason.
I do too. From a like storyline standpoint, it would have been fun to root them against a fully healthy Nets in the Eastern Conference Finals and even into the finals. On the other hand, I love the idea that either the Sixers, the Clippers, the Hawks, or the Suns or the Bucks are going to win a title this year.
Yeah.
And getting there, it's not like you can pencil in. Who's the favorite right now? Who would you call the favorite to win the championship?
I don't know. Phoenix, I guess. But again, with Chris Paul, it's like, you know, they were playing so well. Of course, they played a couple of hobbled teams. There really isn't one, right? I mean, I think the answer is going to change depending on who you're talking to.
Yeah.
The bottom line is there really is not a clear favorite. I could see if Philly, you know, if they right the ship today, you know, that's a pretty talented team right now.
Yeah, I've liked Philly a lot kind of the whole season. I might have wagered on them at some point before the playoffs.
Another gambling scandal involving Kyle Madsen.
I love the idea, though, of, like you said, it's nice to have a villain to root against, for sure. You know, it was LeBron there for a while in the Heat, and then it was the Kevin Durant Warriors. People liked rooting against them, and then it was going to be the Nets, like you said. But now it's great because there's not a favorite. I enjoyed last night's game on just a fan level where it's like, I don't care who wins. I don't care who loses. I wanted overtime, and we got it. And then in overtime, I wanted more overtime. I wanted that Kevin Durant shot to go in. I wanted just awesome basketball plays to happen. And that's what we got. And I'm hoping that that's what we get in the Western Conference Finals and in the Eastern Conference Finals and through to the championship.
Don't you think one of the reasons why Durant was a little upset that his feet were on the line at the end of regulation? I know they could have won the game, but don't you think on some level he knew that, man, if we go to overtime, I'm in trouble. I got nothing. Yes. We got to win this now.
Yeah. Like, you could tell he was out of gas.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Giannis was as well. And I don't think it's a coincidence that like 6 total points got scored in overtime.
Right. Right.
So
888-957-9570. Pardon me, Kyle. I apologize. From the 510 here, John says, it's the flaw inherent in the idea of the super team, less depth and more susceptible to injury. Yeah, especially this year, not to wander too far down that path. But, I mean, you look at virtually every team and they're dealing with injuries. And I know that's not uncommon when you get this far into the NBA season. But especially this year after the shorter offseason, my goodness, fingers crossed that next year will not be the same, but it's hard to imagine that it won't be the same or perhaps worse. 888-957-9570. Robin joins us on 95.7 The Game. Happy Father's Day, Robin. How are you?
Hey, you guys. Happy Father's Day to you, too. And, Kyle, I don't know if you're a dad, but happy Father's Day or whenever you're going to be one in the future.
Thanks,
stop
Robin.
At two. Don't go any further than that because problems harder as they get older. Trust me.
I'll let my fiance know. Thanks, Robin.
So I just a couple of points, you guys. Number one, and I know times have changed, you guys. I just hate super team, the term super team, because I guess when I was watching ball, it was common, you know, back in the day, it was common for all-stars and Hall of Famers to be on the floor. And we thought nothing of it. And I still don't think anything of it. With Brooklyn, and because I think that the NBA's formula sets up mediocrity for our basketball teams, really. As a result of how it's structured, and the Warriors were really, and they laugh at Lakers, but they were really far ahead of the game in terms of how they were able to sustain for 5 years like that. Now, the second thing I want to say is, yeah, you're right. I didn't get that ah-ha-ha feeling that Kevin Durant and them lost, but at the end of the day, I'm glad they lost. And here's another thing. They could have did and utilized their offense a little bit better. But that's a sign of Kevin Durant always wanting to do isolation ball. And that was the problem when he was with the Warriors. And the last thing that I want to say, that this is some of the worst basketball that I have watched in a long, long time. The only one that comes close to even playing decent basketball are the Suns. The Bucks' offense is horrible. Philly's offense, it is horrible. And the Clippers, it is horrible, too. It's like watching pickup basketball. Peace out, you guys, and happy Father's Day.
Thank you, Robin. Appreciate that. I really thought, not to get too lost in the weeds here, I thought one of the keys to the Nets' demise there was the fact that Joe Harris, he's a really good shooter. And if they just got a little more from him last night, obviously it was an overtime game. You could say that about a lot of players. But he was 3-10 last night. I think the Bucks won that game, Kyle, at the three-point line. They had 42% of their threes last night, even though Holiday didn't shoot the ball especially well, nor did Middleton. But they made 15 of 36 threes last night. I thought that was crucial.
Yeah, and Holiday cashed the big one late. He couldn't hit water if he fell out of a boat, and then hit a couple of big shots late for them. And you hit it on the head with Joe Harris. Somebody had said during the playoffs, like, it's not fair that the Nets got their big three and got to keep Joe Harris, who led the league with 47.5% from three this year, which is an asinine number for a whole season. And then he goes and shoots like 24% in this 7-game series. And I agree with you. If he's hitting his shots at a 45% clip, it doesn't even go seven. And if he shoots it well last night, they win it. So I'm with you. I think, you know, you can point to the injuries. They still should have won that series if Joe Harris connects at the rate, or even a little bit below the rate that he did in the regular season.
So what do you think if you're Coach Budenholzer? Do you feel like, okay, maybe I will be back next year? Have the Bucks figured out a few things? I think that's huge. Obviously, the win for Giannis. If they fall flat in the next round, I don't know in terms of rewriting your legacy for what that's worth. I'm not sure how much of that they'll be able to do, but a very significant win for the Bucks. I think P.J. Tucker and Drew Holiday add an element of toughness for them and playoff grit that definitely was lacking. And even though it's clear to see, as we said, Kyle, you watch that game and the series, and you realize, wow, the Nets just not at full strength. I mean, that was a huge, huge win for the Bucks just to get through that. However they did it, a huge win for them and for Giannis.
And here's why. Forget the team they played against. The Bucks in the playoffs, we have seen them collapse and fold when at the first bit of adversity. And when they got down in this series to the Nets, I thought this is a wrap. The Bucks don't have the chops to get through this series. Harden and Kyrie on the floor or not, I don't think the Bucks have the chops to deal with Kevin Durant, Joe Harris, you know, whoever they're going to throw out there. And they did. They got punched in the mouth and they got up and they swung back and they gutted out an overtime game seven on the road and snapped a streak, I think, of seven consecutive game seven losses for them as a franchise. So that was an enormous win, regardless of who it was against. I think they exercised some demons. We'll see what happens in the Eastern Conference Finals. You know, if they go down easily, then, you know, maybe we're rehashing the conversation. But they took a step, definitely. I didn't think that they could take a punch like that from a team like the Nets and come back and win the series.
I thought that last night and also Friday night with the Clippers win, I thought both those games and other games, but especially those two, they put the lie to the notion that we all engage in, that notion that a superstar needs to be able to carry his team on his back. You know, it's funny to me, Paul George, and it's incredible that the Clippers are playing today, that they came back without Kawhi and won. So Paul George is getting most of the credit for that, right? A lot of people are saying, and I don't, maybe you're not saying it, a lot of people are saying, wow, look, he did it. He showed he could carry a team. Yeah, but if it wasn't for Terrence Mann's 39, then they don't do that. So nothing against Paul George. I just think we get carried away with, can the one guy do it? And Giannis now, well, Giannis did it.
Right.
Well, he didn't do it by himself last night. He had 40 points, I know. But if he'd lost, it would have been, Giannis just can't do it.
Exactly.
But he's not the only reason they won that game.
It felt like, with Giannis in particular, it felt like, and I love what you bring up there, with he could have had that exact same performance, but Kevin Durant's toe is behind the line instead of on it.
Yeah.
And the Nets win on a game-winning three at the buzzer, and all of a sudden it's like, whoop, Giannis, and he did the exact same thing.
Thank you. Yeah.
So I get that that's where the discourse would have been. But with Giannis specifically, it felt like a light bulb went off late in that game where he went, nobody can guard me 8 feet and in. So I'm just going to get to my spot at 8 feet and score every single time down.
Yeah.
And I'd never seen him do that in a huge spot like that.
I do think there's something that he and the Bucks figured out. Number of things. For one thing, I believe they switched defensively and they put him on Brown instead of Griffin, which got him more involved in defending the pick and rolls, which was big for them. But also, I think, you know, everyone's been saying Giannis needs to do more. He needs to do more. And I think going back to game six, he realized, or someone realized, it's not so much you need to do more. You need to try to do less, which is you just can't sit out there and try to make a big three when we need it, because that's not what you do. And we have other guys that can do that.
Right.
So, yeah, last night and the game before, he was focused less on threes. He did shoot, I think, six last night. He made a couple of them. You know, 2 for 6, you can live with that. But it wasn't like, you know, one of those 1 for 9s or whatever. So I thought that was very significant for them. I thought it was one of the keys to their win in the series. And going forward, yeah, if Giannis is just making that little adjustment, I think that could be huge for them.
And I think that you hit the nail on the head there. When it's not about Giannis taking the three, it's about Giannis putting his team in a position to where Pat Connaughton is getting a good look at three, or Drew Holiday is getting a good look at three. And I think that's something with Paul George, too. You said we get so obsessed with the guy doing it by himself. Well, what does that mean? Every player needs the guys around him to help and to contribute. And Terrence Mann just happened to have a monster game the other night. And Paul George was excellent as well. The fact that one of his teammates was awesome doesn't take away from what Paul George did. Paul George is undoubtedly right now the leader of the Clippers. He is their best player. And he helped get them to a spot where Rudy Gobert was effectively useless in that game for the Jazz. And it was allowing Terrence Mann to have wide open looks at three, and then all the credit to Mann for hitting him. But that doesn't take away from anything Paul George did, because it wasn't Paul George demanding the shots. No, that's stupid. Put your team in the best position to win. I don't care if that means Paul George takes 10 shots or 30 shots. Win the damn game.
Yes, Kyle, well said. And I hate to say this in the Bay Area, but man, so much for a Stanford education, huh? Brooke Lopez, what was that about?
Oh, wow. My goodness.
Wow. At the end of regulation, they inbound with, what, 2 on the shot clock, and he's throwing the ball out. And it's funny seeing P.J. Tucker and all the Bucks. What are you doing? The shot clock. He's like, oh, man, my bad. So can you imagine how relieved he is that they won that game?
Yeah, because that would be an all-time gaffe if they go on to lose.
Yeah. Yes. And who knows? Maybe it wasn't a key factor. They might have lost anyway. They might have missed the shot. But that was stunning. So I was happy for him. Happy, happy Father's Day. Here's what's coming up. Speaking of the NBA, how much better will the return of Captain Klay actually make the Warriors? And we look ahead to the draft lottery. That and more next with Whitey Gleason, Kyle Madsen on 95.7 The Game.
All right, football fans, the NFL Draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. Audacy. Download it today.